Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave Nassani, otherwise known as Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as others like YouTube, iTunes, Podcast.com, Blueberry.com, Stitcher Radio, and of course, our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, since I'm Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver. I hope that's easy to remember. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. I know it's nasty. I hate to even say it out loud, but we have to. We have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg. Say hello, Adrian.
Hi.
Founder of the Caregiver Space. And not only that, but we will be interviewing today Raymond Holman, famous for capturing photographic images that touch the human heart. By doing portraits of family caregivers of people with Alzheimer's and dementia, he's putting on an exhibit next Friday, February 10th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the LaBelle Art Gallery at 123 Kings Highway, Haddonfield, New Jersey, for all of those of you who are in the New Jersey area. And that would include New York and Washington. And right, where else would that include, Raymond?
Washington, D.C., Florida. I don't care how far you are.
What's the farthest someone has come to your event from? How many miles have they driven or gotten on a bus or a plane?
Probably a couple hundred miles.
Well, there you go. So that covers the whole eastern seaboard.
Yes.
And he has many admirers, including President and Mrs. Obama. Wow, I'm impressed. So stay tuned. Wait, we'll talk about that later. We're still introducing people here. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. Hey, if you're new to the show, we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone video. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial. And oh yeah, they got this bad habit about burning out because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. You know, they give and give and give, get sicker than the one they're caring for. Just follow the advice of the airlines. You know, they tell us in the event of emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. Because the airlines know that if you don't do this, if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved one in an emergency, you'll most likely black out and you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process. You got to go through it. No shortcuts. Can't go around it, over it, under it. Got to go through it. Sorry. But hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to, you know, feel like you're stuck. And I want to take this time to thank Jackie Humphrey, my last week's guest, caregiver and founder of Healthcare Training Services and Products to help caregivers train themselves. It was a great show. I would remind everybody that show and all our shows, including today, can be heard on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz. See if you're a candidate for burnout. Just for doing that, we're going to send you my first book absolutely free. What a deal is that? That's a deal, right, Adrian? Adrian is muted again. Okay. Anyway, welcome to the show, Raymond.
Thank
Why don't you take a moment and tell us just who is Raymond Holman?
Well, I'm a professional photographer located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I've been doing it for about 25 years now. It was a hobby that turned into a career in 1998 when I started doing work for the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Philadelphia Daily News, which are two major newspapers in Philadelphia, and do a lot of corporate work also.
So you were their photographer. You took pictures of lots of stuff.
Yes, I did. Yep, a lot. And I still do, actually.
So what? Yeah, I Googled your name, and lots of amazing pictures came up of lots of stuff.
Yes.
So how many caregiver pictures, photographs, I'm sorry, would you say that you have taken so far?
I have about 90 at the present time.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah, my goal is to have 200 by the fall of this year, 2017.
Now, of course, we know the answer to the next question I'm going to ask you, but I want you to verbalize what's so special about caregivers taking their pictures. I mean, what's so special about a caregiver or someone? Well, you're not actually taking pictures of caregivers. You're taking pictures of their loved ones, or you're taking pictures of the caregivers.
Of the family caregiver.
So they're very special. They're very special people. What have you noticed? Because I'm sure you've taken pictures of every kind of person that you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Why are caregivers so unique and touch the heart? Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Well, because I believe they have the willingness to give up their time to take care of someone who is in dire need of being protected, and make sure that they're okay on an ongoing basis. You know, one of the differences between a person who is experiencing memory loss versus someone who has, you know, a different sort of disease, but just as challenging, is that you can't leave a person with dementia by themselves once they reach a certain stage in that process. There has to be someone around them to make sure that they're able to make it through the day. And that demands on the family caregiver to be available and be willing to help that person and do it with love. And I don't think that every person who exists on this planet has the DNA in them to be willing to do that.
So well, I think I've never heard it put quite that way before, but that is so true, isn't it, Adrian?
It really is.
There's just something about them. It's their DNA, you know.
Yep.
You can have maybe 5 or 10 siblings, and you're lucky if one of them steps forward and says, "I can do this."
Yes.
And the other say, "Well."
And excel at it.
And excel at it. But often you see after, you know, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, you see it kind of etched into their face, don't you?
Right.
What do you see in their face a lot of times that's common?
Well, I think you can see the wear and tear that they take in. And that I think sometimes they become so exhausted focusing on the person they're taking care of that it just shows. And they never seem to have the ability to step back to take care of someone else. Yeah. Other than that person they're taking care of. I mean, they don't take care of themselves often. I mean, there's a study that's out that somewhere between, I don't know, 10 to 20% of family caregivers actually pass away before the person that they are taking care of. And I know in the case of some of the caregivers that were in my first exhibit, a number of them have died.
Wow. Can you guys still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Yeah, so explain, let's talk about these one at a time. Tell us about this picture.
Were the people that passed away children or spouses or?
They were, in the case of this individual here, his name is Father Logan. Father Logan was taking care of his wife. Mm-hmm. And his wife was a few years younger than him. He was still her family caregiver at the age of 95.
Wow.
And he passed away before she did. That's not correct. She passed away about a year later. Father Logan passed away.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But he was her primary caregiver.
For how many years?
For a long, I would say about 15 years, it seemed like.
That's a long, that's
a very long time.
God bless him. And he still maintain his, you know, would do mass or whatever still?
Well, he had retired from that at that point.
Okay.
From doing mass. But I actually knew Father Logan for years. He graduated from the same university that I graduated from just years before me. But I knew Father Logan.
Yeah. Who's this?
Beautiful man. This is Florence Collins. She's actually the wife of the couple that I was talking about earlier during this conversation. Her husband, Russell Collins, was at the age of 54, 52,
diagnosed. That's early.
Yes, with frontal temporal dementia. Mm. And when I met Russell and Florence, Russell was 100% dependent on Florence. This is the couple that I was down in Wilmington, Delaware with capturing still images while WHYY TV 12 was doing video for a project.
How long was she a caregiver?
She was a caregiver for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she looks good.
Yeah, she looks good. Yeah, she took care of herself. But I got to be honest with you. Florence looks good and looked good then. Florence had fibroid myalgia. She had a pacemaker. And she was type 2 diabetes. She was sick.
That's the other thing about caregivers. You know, not only are they caregivers, they got a lot on their plate as well with their own bodies.
Yeah.
But in her case, you know, she can still look like a million bucks. You never know that that she didn't have all that stuff going on. Well, caregiving being the hardest, of course.
And wow. Russell,
now when you
go ahead.
When
Russell, whenever I would go see Russell, which was once a week, Russell and Florence, Russell always looked well kept. Always looked well. She loved
just Russell. Like her.
Yeah, just like her. I mean, it was beautiful to watch those two people together. Beautiful.
Wow. And tell us about this gentleman.
This is a gentleman who, he was from Wilmington, Delaware. He, along with four other men from Wilmington, drove up to Philadelphia one afternoon so I could take portraits of the five of them. They were all family caregivers for their wives. And his name is Joe, I believe. Yes, Joseph. And when I was taking this picture, I have this tendency before I take a picture, I really look at the individual. And I noticed that this guy had like really beautiful eyes, like blue eyes or bluish gray eyes or something. Mm-hmm. And he was extremely calm. And I jokingly said to him, I said, "Dad, go on. When you were young, you probably had all the women chasing after you." And he just kind of smiled. He didn't really say anything. And one of his friends said to me, you know, he was a World War II medal winner. Mm. He was one of the few men, one of the few soldiers in his battalion. Well, battalion might be the wrong word, that survived landing on the beaches in Germany. Wow. But you would never have noticed it or known it by his manner. Just very calm, you know, just handsome looking guy. But he took care of his wife. He was a family caregiver for his wife.
Is she still alive?
She passed away. And he passed away. I was actually talking to one of his friends about a month ago. He passed away about 2 years ago.
Wow.
You know, so one of the things that I have experienced in meeting family caregivers is that you meet some really, really unique individuals. Very, very unique individuals.
Yes, you do. This is a beautiful woman. Tell us about her.
Well, this is Pat Cleveland.
She looks so young.
Yes. Well, Pat is a internationally renowned fashion model.
Yes, I know Pat.
Oh, you know Pat?
There yes.
Okay.
She was one of Halston's mannequins.
Yes. I've known Pat for maybe Pat and Paul and her family for about 15 years now, somewhere mm-hmm. between 10 and 15 years. And Pat was her mother's family caregiver. Mm. And she actually came back from Europe to take care of her mother in New Jersey. Mm. Beautiful person. And Pat's mother just passed away last year.
Now, I'm sure you take several different poses before choosing one. What made you choose this one?
You know, I have another one on the wall. She's in a different pose. But I think what I like about this one is the way she's holding her hands, mm-hmm. The expression in her eyes, just a whole mannerism. And
do you remember what you told her just before you snapped this one?
No, you know, I got to be honest. Pat is a daggone professional model.
Oh, of course. She knows what to do.
She's probably coaching you. Yeah, she was. I said, Dad, go on, Pat. You're deep. Yeah. I mean, she was, you know, Pat was putting those moves on me with those poses, you know, and I was just taking pictures. It was a beautiful experience.
This looks
Pat
like
Cleveland is a beautiful person.
Yes, this one looks like, oh my God, I got to change his diaper again today. Or something like that.
Yeah. But,
Beautiful work.
Thank you.
Who's this character?
Oh, dang, go on. That's the most handsome man in the world, evidently.
That's myself.
I decided, you know, under pressure from you, I had to take a decent picture. You know,
when did you take this picture?
Yesterday morning.
So tell us why this pose, why the black and white, why what you're wearing. I want to know everything about it.
Okay.
Because you're a caregiver too, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, okay. Yes. Isn't black and white because I love black and white photography. The reason why I switched careers was because of looking at black and white photography from the 1900s and the early 20th century. Mm-hmm. And I decided to do my image in black and white. Mm-hmm. And even the whole lighting setup, you know, I wanted to cast a shadow in the background. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted a casual look. You know, I didn't want to wear a tie and jacket. I don't like ties and jackets, you know, so I'm in some formal situation, you know, corporate situation where I might have to wear something like that. And actually, I think that's a nice picture of myself.
It's a great picture.
We are our own worst critics. So for you to say you like that picture, that's saying something.
Well, I try not to be overcritical on myself or anything in this world, you know.
Good for you. My wife needs to learn that when I take her picture.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Any picture I take her.
Well, women have a thing about themselves, you know. Actually, but yeah, I've been realizing men also do.
Yeah.
You know.
You're kidding, really?
You're just discovering this, then.
I'm being facetious, of course.
I know.
This picture behind me, I think it's a great picture.
I do also.
She doesn't, you know, think it's great, but you know.
Yeah, I like it.
This was on a cruise, and so we had to go through dozens before we came to this. And this was the least offensive.
Women have some issues, I think, when it comes to their images, you know? I don't know why that is, but.
Well, listen, this is a good time to take a break. So we'll be right back. Don't go away, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere. But if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Raymond Holman and Adrian Gruberg. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Good. You remember to unmute yourselves.
Yes, I did. I'm becoming professional at this.
Yeah. Raymond, do you know Andre Crouch or know of him?
No, I do not.
Okay. He's known as the godfather of contemporary Christian gospel music. He passed away a couple of years ago. Sad day indeed. Mm-hmm. So, any comments from those pictures, Adrian?
Well, I think they're very telling. I wanted to know when you took the picture of Florence. Was that while she was caring for Russell or later?
That was later. Yeah, it was later, after he had passed away.
And did she have a fulfilling life at that point?
Because she was starting to recover from that particular challenge. And she had the family support of other people in her family also. And Florence is a person who takes care of herself, even though she has those medical challenges.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was taking care of Russell for years. She tried to keep herself on some sort of even keel. I mean, she went for counseling.
So she was really into self-care. She had figured out how not to burn out.
Maybe
even after she burned out. But even a healthy caregiver like that needs to recover when they're no longer a caregiver.
Yeah. And I know that she did at times take a break, maybe a few days, like a weekend. She would take a break from taking care of
Well, that's good.
Yeah, right.
Not everybody has that option. That's one of the hardest parts. Yeah.
Here's a learning opportunity, Adrian. I love to look for them. Why don't you share with some people, what's the best way when you're no longer a caregiver to recover? Have you found?
Me?
you and people who you've spoken with? Is there like a formula? Okay, you're no longer a caregiver. You're a mess. Now, one, two, three.
I don't think there's really a formula. I think that if you know that you can anticipate having a full life after you're finished caregiving, after you've lost someone, that's the key, that you feel like there is life ahead, different, but that it can be very fulfilling. That was why I asked the question about Florence, because she looks like she's very centered and content.
Yeah. Oh, she's very centered.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I knew that I would grieve, and I knew that it might not go away anytime soon. But I also knew that I wanted to do the caregiver space, and that I had a mission now. So knowing that there was something I wanted to fill my life with was important. But I don't think there's any one formula. I mean, people have kids. I don't have children. So for me, it would have been a very, very empty existence if I didn't really have a vision of where I was going and what I wanted to do.
And I can testify that Adrienne is an amazing woman. She is busy. I mean, it's so hard to get her to do anything because she's made so many commitments, but you know, she's doing okay. And she's on the East Coast, but when she was out here visiting her boyfriend, we stopped and took time and had some lunch at Venice Beach, and she's just amazing. And it's hard to imagine who she was in the midst of her caregiving. I mean, I suspect that Florence, even if you took a picture of her in the midst of the toughest struggle, she'd still kind of look good like that.
You know, I was just thinking just now.
That's a good thing.
The brain is still working.
Yeah.
My exhibit was in 2008, the one that she was in. Florence's husband passed away after that exhibit.
Okay.
He was still alive when I did that portrait.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He was still alive. Yeah.
So see, I'm right.
See, I found one of the more important parts for me of caregiving was to take care of myself and to appear the way that I would appear any other time.
Yes.
So that wherever I went with Steve or his mother, because I took care of two people at the same time, the doctors saw me as a professional. They didn't see me as someone who was letting themselves go. They respected me because I was respecting myself and taking care of myself. I was also approachable and friendly. So and the warmth. But I know that looking a certain way and being perceived by all of the staff that you're involved with in caregiving, it's really important.
Right. Yes.
So I'm curious, Raymond, tell me about President and Mrs. Obama. What's up with that? How did that happen?
Okay. Well, I'm a photojournalist, a documentary photographer. Mm-hmm. So Obama at a period before he became President Obama traveled to Philadelphia while he was on a campaign trail.
Mm-hmm. While he was candidate Obama.
Yeah, he's candidate Obama, yes. Okay. I'm great with taking pictures, but sometimes I got to piece together words. But,
yeah, welcome to our world.
Yes. I got a call from a friend one day that candidate Obama was going to be in Philadelphia on a Saturday. And he suggested that I go down there and take pictures. I had already captured some images of candidate Obama at that time, and I really didn't want to go. And at the last minute, I decided to go. So I went down, and because I'm not a person who likes to take pictures of like the same old picture all the time. And I knew that in a particular situation when where a candidate is appearing, most photographers would be on a platform, right, and the candidate would be at a podium. The photographers would be right in front of the subject, and they'd basically be taking headshots. Uh-huh. I decided I didn't want to do that. Matter of fact, I didn't even bring a long lens to have the capability of doing mm-hmm. something like that. And mm-hmm. I talked to the event coordinator, and they allowed me to get very, very close to mm. Obama. And I captured this very, very unique image of him. Actually, it's on a wall in the background there.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
Yeah, that's a picture of Obama. And when he won the election, he came back to Philadelphia for a special meeting. And I had the opportunity to show the original to him. I printed a 16 by 20 of that particular image. Nice. I went through his security and his travel agent or travel advisor or right. travel secretary, wherever the title is. And I had the opportunity to show it to President-elect Obama. He signed it for me.
Wow.
So he signed my original image.
Oh, wow.
And of that signed one, I decided to have about a 22 by 30 G-Clay print done.
Mm.
It's a limited edition of 44 because mm-hmm. he is the 44th president. I sent number one of 44 to him, and I have number two of 44. And they eventually
you sold the rest?
No, I haven't printed anymore. It's on demand. I printed on demand. Yeah.
I mean, the edition of 44 sold.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, I haven't sold. They're on demand, so I haven't sold any than those two. But I have others I am selling.
Mm-hmm. So 42. If 42 people want it, they can get it.
Yep.
You hear that, guys? Yeah, he has some serious fans around the country.
yeah. So that's what that is all about. They actually, someone from the White House called, a curator called about 6 months after they received it to ask about some information on it. Because what I found out, when a president leaves the White House, anything that's gifted to them, and this is correct understanding, they can't take it with them. They either have to pay for it or is donated.
Oh. I guess nobody told that to Mrs. Clinton.
Hey, well, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Did I say that out loud?
I don't talk about politics.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you did.
But
okay.
That's the relationship I have. You know, I got to be honest with you. I have had dreams where I am at a party that the Obamas are putting on. So I have some high expectations for myself before I leave this planet, Earth.
Good.
Yes.
As well you should.
Yes.
So let me ask you, how many exhibits have you done so far? I mean, how long have you been doing the caregiving thing? And tell us about, you know, where you've been and those that are involved and, you know, some of your accolades. I give you permission.
Okay. Well, the one that's coming up in February 2017, February 10th, this would be my third, where the subject matter is Alzheimer's disease and family caregivers.
Your first time in Jersey?
In New Jersey, yes. Yeah.
My next stop
I plan to be in is New York City, the Big Apple. But my first one was in 2008, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the African American Museum in Philadelphia. It was a 59 portrait exhibit, one person exhibit. Great turnout. I was in partnership with WHYY TV 12, public broadcasting station, African American Museum in Philadelphia, and also the Alzheimer's Association of Delaware Valley. In 2013, I had my second exhibit. That was at University of Pennsylvania Perelman Center for Advanced Medicine. And that was in partnership with the Penn Memory Center. And I'm actually on the Penn Memory Center Advisory Board also.
That's an interesting partnership.
Yes. It's very, very uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And you were voted Philly's best photographer 2009?
Yeah, 2000. Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did they do that, and how many were they considering?
I have no idea, Beyonce. I got this this letter in the mail about that.
What photographs were in your portfolio in 2009?
The Obama image, a lot of stuff from the newspapers.
Not caregiving yet, though, right?
Not caregiving yet. Okay. No, not as far as in that particular portfolio. No, not that I shared with anyone.
Well, I'm happy that you went in the direction of caregivers, and you're very, very talented.
Well, thank you. As far as I'm concerned, it's the gift that the universe gave me. And I was the first person in my family to graduate from college with a degree.
Oh.
My thought when I came out of college, I'd be with one company for my entire life. I would, retire from that company, house, with a wife, family, a dog, and a white picket fence.
Yep.
But I picked up a camera one Christmas holiday, and that one act became like a monkey on my back that I was not able to shake off.
How old were you?
I was about 25 when I did that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was 25. I was working for the best bank in Philadelphia and the second best bank in the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, it was a good bank, First Pennsylvania Bank, which no longer exists now.
So how old are you now?
68 years old.
Oh, you look good for 68.
Well, thank you.
You're just 5 years ahead of me.
Okay.
And the same as me.
Okay. Actually, something, Adrian, I've been checking you out on Facebook, so I knew we were the same age.
I don't lie about my age either.
She's got a lot of people checking. My wife is proud of her age too. She's 72.
Oh, she is?
And brags about it.
Okay.
I know. Mm.
As well we should.
Yes.
As well we should.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's time for another break, so take a breather, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps, ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Raymond Holman and Adrian Gruberg. And let's take this in a different direction here. Let's talk about the future. Raymond, do you think that caregiving, the caregiver funding will ever happen from the federal government in our time? I mean, you're certainly making more and more people aware of the need. You know, I know I've seen things like this happen when President Reagan, came down with Alzheimer's, brought awareness way up there. Mm-hmm. Caregivers need so much help. So many of them are broke. So many of them, you know, could just use something. And what you got any ideas on that?
Well, you know, when my father died in 2001, there didn't seem to be much financial support coming from anywhere with regard to how to cure this. And through the years, I don't see where anything has changed, really. I know that at the Penn Memory Center, University of Pennsylvania, they are doing research, but their funding is on a, I don't know, two-year period or a two-year term or something. Mm-hmm. And I often hear how not enough funding is coming from the federal government to do research to find a cure, even though you hear pledges from politicians stating that they want to find a cure, but funding is hard. So I don't know.
Yep.
I don't know when more funding will come, and I don't understand at all why the federal government isn't putting aside money to help research this particular disease, you know, because if they don't find, if there's no cure found in the next few years, there's going to be a lot of people walking around this planet not knowing who they are or where they're going. Because, you know, I mean, I know that my father was taking Aricept when he was going through his challenge. That is still one of the medications that doctors give. And that only works for a short period of time, if at all.
Well, with our current president, love him or hate him, he's certainly breaking all the rules and doing things, his way. And this may be a great opportunity if America's caregivers would just flood the White House with, hey, we need this, you know, we need that. Caregivers are growing at an alarming rate.
Yes.
And, you know, everybody's got an elderly parent or a spouse or disabled children. I mean, caregivers are one of the most unrecognized groups in America, in my opinion. And it's because they're not militant. They're not, you know, they don't have it in them to speak out and be activist. So someone needs to talk on their behalf. Go ahead, Adrian.
I mean, at one point I wanted to do a caregiver's walk, and then I realized, no, I would have to do it where somebody else walked for the caregiver because the caregiver would be at home.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, Adrian. I don't want you to give up on that idea.
No, I haven't.
Well, you know, Adrian, you know, two and a half years ago, I was in Manhattan and I captured portraits of 10 caregivers from the Manhattan, Bronx, Brooklyn area. And I went back up about 6 months later to do more. I was partnering with a photography business that's no longer in operation up there. The second time I went up, no one showed up.
Wow.
And I believe it was because caregivers have a problem finding someone to take their place while they go out and do other things. You know, so that needs to be somehow addressed.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that. I was just writing something that I hope gets published in the Huffington Post, just to that effect. A lot of it has to do with educating and communicating about these problems. And there's no question that somebody who does have dementia or Alzheimer's is not going to want a stranger coming in to take care of them.
Right.
They'll, even if they don't know who you are, they like a familiar face. They like to feel safe.
Yes.
So even if that person calls you by the wrong name and starts talking about you behind your back, it's an issue that has to be addressed, that people really need to know how difficult it is for us, because the patients will not necessarily welcome a stranger in for respite care.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, my father was extremely independent person. When my father was healthy, he stood about 6'4", 6'5", weighed about 250 pounds. He was a little bit overweight at that point, but he was a big guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we went through two different caregivers before we were able to find the two that took care of Daddy for the next 4 years. You know, my father could cook. My father had to take care of himself. So the issue with both of the first two was he didn't like their food, the food he cooked, that they cooked for him.
Sure.
And my father did not like the way they treated him.
Mm.
And he told me they got to go. You know, we were lucky enough to find two people that he really trusted. And they took care of my father extremely well. For 4 years, they never missed a time slot. If one had to do something else, the other one covered for that person. I never worried about them. So we were blessed in that way. You know, but other families don't have that particular experience. And that's why I think, you know, family caregivers are so important and so unique, you know, because they're hard to find.
I mean, what I did with my mother-in-law, who was 90 at the time that we were looking for a companion to give me some help, we let her pick from five different people. We brought them in so that it was her choice, who she got along with, who she had chemistry with.
Right.
And that was empowering for her, because she was, you know, she was dying, and she knew she was dying. It was another 2 years, but she was this little tiny bird, you know, and she wanted to feel good about the person that she sat with.
Right. Yeah. You know, the thing about my father, now, at one time, I mentioned to my father, or I suggested to him, that he sell the house. There was a very nice senior citizen home directly across the street from his house. It used to be an elementary school, nice school building. You know, they had converted to senior citizen location. And I asked Daddy, just before he started losing his memory, about, you know, moving there might be easier. And Daddy said, no, I'm not moving anywhere. I'm staying here. My father actually died in his house, in the living room of his house. We never had to move him anywhere. And one of those reasons was because of the people that we found to stay with him during the daytime.
Yeah.
It was just a really, really beautiful experience. You know, I'm extremely happy.
You are blessed to have found that. Adrian, what would it take to start a caregiver walk? What's the logistics?
A little money and some publicity, a good PR person.
Money can come from contributions of big corporations involved in the medical industry.
Yes, underwriters. Yeah, I mean...
And you know how to do that, right? You've done similar things in the past, haven't you? Similar to that?
Yes, but never for myself.
You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for caregivers around the country.
Yes.
And that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
I hereby anoint you, Adrian, to to go ahead and do that and let me know what help you need.
And then we need Raymond to take pictures of everybody.
You know, Adrian, I was going to say... offline, actually, I want to be able to get in contact with you.
Sure.
You two are so close, geographically.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's only an hour and a half from New York City. Mm-hmm. I really want to talk to you moving forward.
Sure.
I think that is important. And I want to talk to you. I really want to talk to you.
Your pictures were in Brooklyn too, right?
No, I captured portraits of people from Brooklyn in the tri-state area, but I haven't exhibited in Brooklyn or in New York City.
Or New York.
Like I said earlier, one of my goals is to find a location and sponsorship to have a major exhibit in New York City. My intention is to, by the end of 2007, to have completed this book project portion of the project and exhibit in major museums and galleries around the United States.
That was my next question. Is there a book in this?
Yes, there is. Yeah, yes. The deadline, Adrian, is the end of this year.
Okay.
You know, at the exhibits. Next week, actually, February 10th, I will have a prototype, a hard copy of the book. But it's very small. It only has like 24 pages in it. But I want to start being able to show corporations and individuals, foundations, an example.
Sure. Have you been in touch with the Alzheimer's Association?
I'm close to the Alzheimer's Association. They know of me in Philadelphia.
Okay.
But one of the things I've learned about organizations like the Alzheimer's Association and other organizations, they're very myopic.
Yes.
In their view. So I know what they will do and they won't do.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I'm talking, well, both of us talking about funding now, you know, so.
Because, I mean, you're talking about funding for research, and they are very well funded.
Yeah, I know.
And you wonder where all of their money is going.
So the goal, you know, the challenge is to find people or organizations that see that there's other opportunities to share information or get out the information about not just the person experiencing memory loss, but the thousands of people who are family caregivers and a story that is not being told about them.
Right.
You know, because, you know, the family caregivers don't speak up. I mean, that's one of the things I've realized about family caregivers. They don't speak up. And often they don't want to.
That's one of my very, very major complaints about family caregivers. I know you're trapped in the house, but at least make some noise. You've got a computer. You can send, give your postman an envelope. Make some noise. Let people know what you need and how hard it is for you.
But they don't do that. I mean,
no.
Adrian, you know, my experience, before I became a family caregiver for my father, I was so focused on my career as a photographer. That was really all that was in my mind. Growing my photography business, taking the best daggone picture I could take at every moment on assignment or just walking down the street and figuring out a way of living in peace. I mean, I was into my life when Daddy became sick. It was like overnight I had to become this person. I became this person that decided to take care of Daddy. And I gradually, unknowing to myself, got deep into this caregiving mode. And it took me a lot of years to recognize the fact that I had changed. I had become this person that wanted to help Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And when Daddy died, that habit didn't go away. It didn't go away. And I mean, it's only been like in the last few years I realized that I needed to work on myself, you know, because I kind of forgot about myself. Or as someone else told me, a psychiatrist. My nickname is Skip. She says, Skip,
okay, Skip.
You lost yourself. You lost your daggone self. And she was right. You know, so I think that's what happens with caregivers, if they're not careful. You know,
so Raymond, what can Adrian and I do to help this upcoming event for you, to help promote it or whatever?
Well, if you could rebroadcast this taping today, and if you could just share the media, I'm not certain if I emailed you a media release. Mm-hmm. I don't think I did.
No.
Oh, I did actually. Okay.
Did you?
I'll re-email it to you again, or email it to you again. Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. And just mention it to people.
And I'll send you a copy of this as well. You can share it on all of your social media, which I assume you have social media.
I have tons of dag on social media.
There's a word you don't hear much anymore. Daggone.
Daggone.
Yeah, no. I don't know why I say that, but I say it a lot. You know, I haven't grown up.
Because you're from Philly. Okay.
I'm from Philadelphia. I'm still kind of like childlike. You know.
So how can we get a hold of you? How can people get a hold of you and find out more about you and maybe come to the event in Jersey?
My telephone number is 215-205-7414. And my email address is Raymond, which is spelled R-A-Y-M-O-N-D at R-H-O-L-M-A-N. JR.photo, PHOTO. And those two ways are extremely easy. And I respond.
I understand why everybody loves Raymond now.
Yes. Oh, I didn't tell you. I forgot to tell y'all. For that show, Everyone Loves Raymond?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That was on a while back.
Right.
That was written about me.
Really?
I just didn't get paid for it.
Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
Well, my email is Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. And the website's thecaregiverspace.org.
Okay, well, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone, so... remember, we're here every Wednesday at noon Pacific time. And don't forget to take that quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout, on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and we'll send you a copy of my book absolutely free. So thank you so much for tuning in today. All of our podcasts are on that website, so check out some more. Find some titles that interest you. So thank you again for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.